I've got Honorable Thompson, sorry, follow-up question, Honorable Abram, for a follow-up question. So I'll start with, yes, Mantuli as well. And Honorable Khainan. So in that order, Honorable Khainan.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. You know, I agree that when Mr. Pott referred to the issue of looking for a model for aligning LRAD and CAST, because my question deals around with that. If we look at the foreword of the Minister to this report, she says that the main purpose of this department is to grow agriculture and to address the skewed land ownership pattern of our country. And also, if we go to Program 2, we see that the major objective is to improve emerging farmers' access to and sustainable participation in agriculture. Now, my problem is, while it's wonderful news to hear that there's an attempt to align these two very divergent programs. You know, when LRAD started, you had a situation that somebody got hold of land, they often leased it out to an existing commercial farmer, because there's no way people who had absolutely nothing could get sufficient access to buy cattle or equipment to farm with or working capital to plant crops with. So CAST is a huge improvement. But I think the problem still is that the very issue there where it refers to looking for a model. Now, if the department is going to design that model or attempt to design that model, I have a very, very serious problem with its sustainability or its success. Reference is made to the Strauss Commission, which said the state must get out of the business of loaning money. For the very reason the state doesn't know how to do it. I don't know how to do it. I'm not a banker. And the state's not a banker either. And the state is not a farmer. And I'm concerned when Deputy Director Titi referred to a long list of mentors, all organizations, like the World Growers Association. The World Growers Association don't farm. It's notorious how large organizations, among others Anglo-American, spent millions and lost millions of money trying to farm. It's individuals worldwide that farm. And mentors, in my opinion, I think in the opinion of proven record, should be existing commercial farmers. One should twin existing commercial farmers with emerging farmers. Particularly, one should twin them with agricultural employees. Those are people who already demonstrated their wish to be in agriculture, they already have agricultural knowledge. Mustn't try and look for people outside agriculture to bring in as emerging farmers. Now, the question I have is, and this is a policy question, I don't know whether to direct it to the director or to Mr. Scott, but is it possible there would be a policy shift to look for commercially successful people and organizations, for instance, in designing a model, shouldn't one look for commercial banking sector to help designing models, and shouldn't one look at the commercial farmers for your direct designers of the farming model itself, what to farm with, where to farm with it, how to farm with it, and to be the mentor of those people that one wants to assist in this matter. Thank you.
Honorable Sasha? She's not ready. Honorable Abraham?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, just a follow-up question to Mr. Murray regarding the agricultural, what was that, Amdao, whatever you call it. Is the interest thereon capitalized? I mean, amounts owing, because these amounts come from many, many years. So is it annually capitalized? Then I noticed that with regard to some of those co-ops that are folding up, the capital amount outstanding and the interest in many of those instances is the same. How does that work out? Who clogged it? And then, with regard to the annual report, the DOA had apparently involved stakeholders in the discussions on biofuels. Why hasn't the department involved the portfolio committee in such discussions? There have been recent media reports linking huge food increases on biofuels. Has the department undertaken research to investigate the impact of biofuels on food prices? And if that was done, what are the findings? Then, Chair, the National School Egg and Milk Program has tried to get the Department of Education to include milk in the menus provided to schools within the National School Nutrition Program. Currently, South Africa is faced with a dwindling numbers of dairy farmers due to various reasons. And this impacts negatively on milk production. What measures has the DOA put in place to ensure that there is enough available milk to support the program on the one hand, and also to create new emergent farmers who can commercially supply milk? Finally, sir, with regard to the response given by Mr. Swart, now, I understand that there is a poultry sector plan and things like that. But what I'm specifically interested in is this, Chair. If one looks at the... One doesn't need to go and do a massive investigation. One can merely see that the average household seems to have a bit more money to spend, and proteins in the form of broilers, chicken meat, is far more cheaper than, for example, a kilo of lamb or a kilo of beef. And therefore, it makes it possible for many more families to rather buy a 2 kilogram pack of early bird or festive or whatever for 25, 26, 27 rand than to go and pay 40, 50 rand a kilo for lamb. It puts a protein on the table, and it has a variety of uses, chicken meat. Now, Jefferson, the question is, why don't we as a department utilize the funding that we are making available? And also, I think Mr. Marais referred to the fact that the monies that are being recuperated in terms of the agricultural credit, the old Agricultural Credit Act, is now being utilized for Mafisa. Now, we are trying to utilize that money to satisfy too many people. And in the end, we seem to be finding that very few people are going to make a success out of it. Because if you are giving four women, for example, 10,400 rand, by Joe, please, what can those poor ladies do with 10,400 rand? What I'm saying is that why don't we aggressively look at the possibility of creating small trusts of, say, 15, 20 people and fund them adequately, give them the necessary skills to do broiler production, to become broiler growers, to satisfy this market which is expanding. And in that way, make commercial farmers out of such people. Then to talk or work with sector plans, I would like to see some action where the department can involve and can be involved and do this sort of thing. It'll empower far more people in a far shorter time frame because you have 6 cycles of production in a year. Can you imagine where it would take our people? And what is happening at the moment, Chairperson, right now, I can show you, I can even go and take photographs and show you, that there are broiler houses going up on commercial farms where the farmer already has 5 or 6 of them, but the processors need more, and they are putting up another 5 or 6. Why do we allow some people to have too much and increasingly get more, and we as a department are not proactively promoting something which is beckoning you, where you can see that there are possibilities. Why don't we grab it? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Mantuli.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm still a grassroots person. In my view, all the programs must try to address the challenges that we are faced with, which is poverty, unemployment. We're talking about halving unemployment by 2014 and creating better opportunities, developing a commercially viable farming emergent groups. Now, and in your document, you have also highlighted that you have challenges, like one, for instance, lack of capacity, such as shortage of agricultural economists and engineers, which affects implementation of CAST in particular, and lack of alignment between CAST and other government programs. I won't go further down to MAPISA, I'll highlight just the two. Now, my question would be, on CAF, you are saying the department transfers money to the provinces, and the provinces in turn uses that money informed by the projects that are on the ground. Now, are we able to say we are reaching the objectives of the program? Is the participation of emergent farmers improving? Are we able to address the challenges that we are faced with? If not, did we try to make a qualitative research, or qualitative and quantitative research on what is happening on the ground regarding this particular program, to find out whether we are going forward or backward? That's just a question that in my mind, I'm trying to create a picture that this program is doing good or bad. I can't find anything on the ground. Thanks.
Honorable Sasu. You were the second on my list. I called your name, and then I had to pass. So
I'm sorry about that. My question was not well answered. I wanted to check as to how the PECs, what impacts are the what is the impact of the tax that has been distributed, and how do you measure it?
The next is Honorable Beatrice, followed by Honorable Van Mika and Honorable Freya.
Thank you, Chair. Somewhere in this annual report, the mention is made of 1.4% decrease in maize income. Now, taking it into account that we do have researchers and what have you, taking into account that we are not Sangomans, we are not going to know some of the things which are going to happen tomorrow. But is the department able best to say this is something which is going to be the trend, taking into account that maize is the staple food? Is it going to be something which is going to be the trend in terms of your researchers? And if that is going to be the case, what is the department doing? What strategies were put in place to circumvent this problem? Thank you.
Honorable
Banika. Thank you, Chair. Just one question which now came up to me again after listening to the problems with financing new farmers. Won't the department again entertain rewriting the Agricultural Credit Act and put in place what is necessary for what is required under the new South Africa. Because I look at that act and how it really helped farmers who had nothing to come into place. How we had people in all sectors and all magisterial districts monitoring, supervising and helping. Giving certain farmers and low interest, and as they start generating income and expertise, you then bring it up to date. At the moment we've got so many schemes, all separate in a sense, one trying to help the other, but I think if you would go into the history of this and take the politics out of this and look if this is a successful method to help farmers, you will find a lot of the problems we can solve by having that act. That's the one point, sir. The other question I would like to ask is, and I'm a bit worried in terms of the EU making sounds of looking at our exports and the fish and the phytosanitary and zoosanitary measures that they are going to put up. Now, this is a tricky question. Emily Mokonyane will remember that the problems that we had with the ostriches, when we did not really confirm at the right stage the different measures required by the European Union and others. My question is, to what extent are we now preempting, because we will have these problems again. They occur and we must be ready to deal with them. And I'm just looking at the swine fever that we had and this outbreak in the Western Cape now again, and foot and mouth is always on our neck somewhere. It can, and the problem is that it's not only that specific commodity which has a disease which is influenced. It is usually all exports, even maize exports, can be influenced if we have put under quarantine over a certain thing. And are we really ready to deal with this? And to what extent have we looked at the mistakes that we've made over the last 2 or 3 years in this regard and to prevent them? Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jay. I appreciate the proposal by the DG that there should be interaction between the officials from FISA and this portfolio committee, because there's a lot of unanswered questions in connection with FISA. For instance, they should explain the criteria for allocating loans to beneficiaries. For example, an allocation in the Eastern Cape of about 23,000 rand was made to 30 beneficiaries. And it doesn't make sense. It's less than 1,000 per beneficiary. I think it also relates to the question asked by Honorable Abraham. And then a question linked to what Mr. Botha asked in connection with the alignment of caste and elder. But shouldn't it be an alignment between CAST, LRAD and MAFISA? Then I would like to ask that why 714 CAST projects were completed instead of the 874 approved for the financial year. The next question, Chair, is in connection with the Agriculture Pest Act that was supposed to be approved by Cabinet at the end of March. What is the progress in connection with this act? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I'm informed that I was talking to one of Botha is new in the committee. I'm using new advisedly, but not new to the issue. And we also are joined by Honorable Singh from the ISP. So I'm not the only one who's coming.
perhaps just a few questions from my side. If you look at page 24, the issue that we're raising about human resource and capacity. There's a reference there to departmental expenditure. In fact, the last sentence there, not the last, but I think the third from the last, it says the surplus under program 2, which is livelihoods, economics, and business development, resulted from the funds that were not spent under the Agri-BEE and LRAD programs, as well as the agricultural services, which was as a result of vacancies across all the programs. Now, we've been trying to very hard to probe this particular question, and we have not exactly heard what we're asking from you, TJ. Can we speak to that? Because it arises as a surplus, and yet it's under expenditure, and some of the programs are suffering because of issues of capacity within the department. Again, on page 29, the issue of asset management. Now, the first paragraph there, it says that during 2006 and 2007 financial year, the department disposed of assets to the value of 638 million rand, looking 638,000 rand, located at the Stellenbosch Code 14 Agricultural Development Institute. Now, this is what worries me. Losses as a result of the of theft during the period under review amounted to 1,051,000. And if you go to the next page on security services, they talk about the CCTV cameras and so on. How did these losses occur? And what are we doing to recover these losses? On page 30, on administration, just a curious question on the purpose of this program. It says that the administration program provides the DOA with political and strategic leadership and management and manages capital investment. What does this political mean from an administrative point of view? I thought this is the job of the minister and the deputy. On page 52, it's a question which is a follow-up to what Honorable Abrams raised in terms of the biofuels. Now, in terms of your fourth quarter report, this reference there made that a document that provides the potential crop that could be used as feedstock for biofuel has been compiled. Perhaps if you can just elaborate on that point. And as Honorable Abrams has indicated, what would be the potential impact of that on the issue of food security in an instance where some of the crops that we're talking about have got to do with, you know, basic subsistence and survival of our people. On the Auditor General's report, page 81, now, there's point number 20 there, which talks about lack of sufficient appropriate audit evidence. What that means is that this report that we're considering on some of the issues that you say, you have achieved some of those things in the opinion of the Auditor General. Cannot be substantiated. can we talk to that particular part as well? That is both 2020 and 21, which talks about the fact that in some instances we have achieved this, and the information when the auditor conducts his performance audit, there are inconsistencies between what you have actually achieved and that which ultimately is established as an achievement. So those would be questions from me, that DG. If you can just respond to all the questions and follow-ups and comments that have been made.
Thank you, Chair. I will, of course, leave Mr. Mare next to me to answer most of your questions, Chair, on page 5, on personnel, asset management, losses, also the political, as well as the political one. It's very easy, Chair. That's where the ministers and the deputy minister in terms of problems are located there. So when it was talking to the political, it was mentioning in that respect to this program, the minister. You'll have the minister, the deputy minister, and the DGs mentioned receiving their funding, particularly from this program, but Mr. Mare would elaborate. I may have to take the biofuel issue because I don't think any of my managers here could take that one, Chair. Take the one I will address also the issue by Honorable Panike in terms of the Agriculture Credit Act. I would leave the others to be picked up by my colleagues, including the Tommy will take at my as well again. Rangi and Dr. Mohajana will pick up the rest. In as far as, Chair, the biofuel document is concerned, indeed the compilation has been done quite successfully by the department with partners. Partners here, we included the commodity groups, agribusiness, as well as farming organizations in terms of fulfilling the task that was given to this department by the cabinet under a general instruction of a national task team, which is headed by DME. The respective tasks which were given to the DME, the Department of Agriculture, Trade and Industry, and Finance and Treasury differed. Our own had to look into some right at these three issues. One, the suitability of the land to be identified for growing the feedstock. The second one, the crops which would be identified in terms of the feedstock, and the third one, farmer mobilization and organization. And on all of those, we've done and published and produced documents that have indicated. We even have the maps onto where this could be done in terms of the land. In terms of the land, our studies revealed that currently we could have a total of more than 5 million hectares. That is, as Cabinet was saying, and as we had ruled for ourselves, if we were to put in the land into production, how would you, and here it addresses some of your questions, Chair, and the members, regarding the food security. What we are saying is that, is it possible, and how would you do it so that you put more, you would produce this feedstock meaning the material needed to produce. The approach was that first indicate the land other than the one that is currently utilized that is suitable for. So we produce land in general, but then we said land other than that is currently under production. Within what we call the heartland of South African agriculture, which is the grain areas of Northwest, Free State, and Mpumalanga and Gauteng, we discovered the data, not discovered, we found that there is actually available, in other words, quote unquote, idle land of up to something like 4 million that's available there. But the objective given here, the task given to this task team, was that you've got to include previously disadvantaged areas and farmers. So we went further than what we call the heartland and said, in the former homeland areas, how much of land can actually be put on stream here? I think, again, close to between 3 to 4 million hectares could be put in there, because we were saying the study found that that land is currently, again, I'm saying, quote-unquote, idle, that could be put on. What then the study went on to do was that for the whole assignment as given by cabinet, we needed something like 2 million to supply 1 billion liters of the fuel that is needed. And there was a margin that was deliberately left in to cater for the ups and downs, whether due to drought, due to other mishaps, so that you give yourself a sufficient cushion. Two things are answered by these studies, therefore, from that perspective, Chair. One is that the land identified both in commercial and in former homeland areas is the land that is said to be, again, say, quote-unquote, idle. So it wouldn't disturb the current production and any activities that are actually ongoing. In many respects, particularly with former homeland areas, it would bring in additional land into production. The minister goes on with the slogan of Ilima is precisely aimed to bring onto board land and livestock that is underutilized, so to speak, so that it benefits the people that own them already. So you look into what is there under the ownership. So the study has already revealed and answered the question from the perspective of saying, will there be a food security? It didn't essentially have that in mind, but I'm now giving the members question, saying it does, because it was saying it's land that is idle, both from the commercial and the former homeland areas. The second issue indeed was to engage with the farming community to mobilize them sufficiently in order to say what does it take to participate, what would it be needed, and what are the systems that will be there. This process is ongoing. It was started by DME, Department of Minerals and Energy, to come and canvass the opinions as well as the interest of the communities. I could say up front that there's been animated interest from both the commercial and the emerging farmers in terms of wanting to come on board here. Members would know, of course, that immediately after cabinet announced this biofuel strategy, various announcements came in from the farming community, establishing companies of all sorts: Biofuels Africa, Ethanol Africa, a series of these. It was announcements of intent, because on the ground when you went to ask them, there was nothing. And when we asked some of them why are you doing this, they were saying we're claiming the space in terms of what cabinet had announced. Up to now you don't. It's research that has been done, intent in terms of investment. We know of big foreign, including foreign players that want to come and participate in the event that government eventually announces a policy. Incidentally, Chair, the policy has yet to be announced in terms of where do we final rest, and that's the DME. My assessment, and according to the DME's pronouncement, that it's likely to come in either this month or next month, in terms of where cabinet finally rests in terms of the support programs and everything around that. Now, that is in as far as the biofuel, the concerned, the crops vary. Generally, worldwide, is that you either have what is called food crops, your maize, your soya, your sunflower, canola, and all the others coming in, and or you have non-food crops such as the laser and an alien plant that is being touted very strongly here. It's called Jatropha. India is very active in producing for the biofuel, for its biofuel industry. But in South Africa, we classify that crop as an alien crop. And some of the experimentations also proved very, very unsuccessful. In Northwest, Jatropha couldn't survive the frost. And I understand the seedlings of something like a million or four were actually wiped out by the first frost that came in. So it's very sensitive to low temperatures. The debate, though, of whether this would disturb our food is along the lines that I've indicated earlier. I'll jump in quickly from this one and conclude, Chair, by saying that in answering to the honorable members, Abraham's question, why haven't you come here? I would take that one as saying we would have to come here and address the portfolio committee in as far as this matter is concerned of the biofuel. But as matters stand, we are waiting for the final say-so from the lead department, which is DME. And what is awaited there is what the stakeholders around this have been raising. Are there any tax breaks? Is there any support? Part of our study has also revealed the possible impacts, some of them including importation care. If we were to go big time, there could be one impact of importing additional feedstock coming here, but DME has advised us on how to deal with it. Rather than start very high, say with a blend of 5% or 10, which might force us to import, they were saying, I had this discussion with the DG, DME was saying, why don't you start low? That on the basis of your capacity to produce, which has been an alien subject here, you then actually increase rather than start high, which is preferably in many respects on the blending, but your capacity might actually throw you onto the import market. And already I've indicated earlier on where our problems at the moment are, and this might aggravate our problem. DME was also saying if you start very high and you are unable to produce, they would then be bound, actually, to seek the resources and the supplies from wherever it might be. And this might hit at the original cabinet intent. So they were advising very modest beginnings, build on them as capacity that they could release. That's the advice which we've received from the DME. And they will ultimately come in with the issues of whether there'll be support. There's a very strong lobby from the stakeholders that indeed the tax breaks, there be support. The example is pointed of Brazil, which went in for years before it became competitive, to say really, have a policy of new industries applying in this particular case. We'll see how it finally settles up, Chair. I'm not aware of Treasury being sympathetic to the tax break. And already we are citing certain measures that the Treasury is saying are already akin to what is being expected from themselves. Chair, the other matter that I said I would touch on, the issue of Mafisa comes in again, Chair, and it could be far better to discuss it within the proposed, we'll add this issue on top of that. Honorable Faneke, have raised this issue several times, and it's interesting that the issue of the Agriculture Credit Act, what he calls the rewriting or reintroduction, was almost in the same way as when the President introduced what is now Mafisa in 2004. He said the reintroduction of the Agriculture Credit. He didn't say a board, as we know ACB. He said actually Agriculture Credit Scheme, and in many respects, we read it like that. What does differ here, apart in comparison with the ACB as we know it, is that it had a board that was receiving the applications and dealing with it, the matters as Mr. Marais stated here. It was extensive in its coverage of the areas of support. It also had immense powers of stopping the liquidation and any measures taken by creditors against the farmers. Now, in part, some of the modifications that have been done to MAFISA is where these powers, the Section 21, 28, and 34 of the Old Credit Act that we are talking about here, which we were advised that you don't have to introduce those. But the help and the use of it was that when action was taken, under that ACB system, literally government could move in and stop the creditors by paying them out, by taking and consolidating, which brought you into the book that Mr. Murray was talking about. So partly to ensure that amongst others we don't create and perpetuate that system, we then found ourselves saying no to some of the features. But there are some features of the ACB that actually needs to be brought in. And some of these were the committees that existed across the country of experts and experienced people who then actually assess whether you don't have chances, some people that actually could certainly fail, but also have a series of schemes and measures that could support, including in the event of disaster. It was the ACB vehicle. Now we are actually having serious problems with regard to disaster because you don't have at hand, as the ACB was, in the event of disaster, to quickly move in. What we now have on average, say something like 18 to 36 months after the disaster to respond. The ACB would react immediately. These are some of the issues that, indeed, if we have to go along the line that Dr. Paneker is alluding to, we've got to. These, in principle, have got to be brought on board in that manner, other than the ones that are being looked into. I emphasize, Chair, that in the announcement of MAFISA, which was known officially as Agriculture Credit Scheme by the President, all the features, because he said reintroduce, and he took the land bank out of it and said, government has got to focus into the sources, which is the tone and the orientation is indeed that go as far as you can. I think we've got to continue that exploration because the experience is proving that indeed immense gaps were left with the removal of that scheme. But we will have to again pick that one up as part of our discussion. I would share this. Let me touch on something which is coming again from the members around the alignment of the various schemes. We will probably have to come back to the committee again and talk about this land and agrarian reform program. I had said it has the five elements. One of the elements is services in total, and we are saying farmers should have this universal access to those services. Now, this new approach, and that's what it should be called, proceeds from the basis of a new term that I'm hearing from my official, I don't know how to interpret, they call it all-in-one. It's almost like some are calling it one-stop shop, some all-in-one to say, if the constituency of MP Emanuel approaches a particular point in the areas of their residence and activity, they should go get all the services that are available, at least within the ministry. To that end, what we've done is that we've compiled all the list of what Land Affairs and Agriculture has in store for the people that are there. What we are now further seeking to do with this program is to ensure that if they enter there, it's the duty of the system to provide all that which is wanted rather than to say go to door so and so or go to place so and so. So we provide all of those. So it's in the alignment in that manner that I'm alluding to when I was saying Land Affairs and Agriculture have as a concrete evidence in this scheme, is in this program, that you'll get all the services and all that which is wanted. How we sort ourselves up is not the business of the beneficiaries, it's the government system in general. This is the approach that the cluster system seeks to to follow. Easier said, Chair, but sometimes in the end, when from the experience I've gone through with lenders, it's extremely tedious, but very helpful in the end when you realize the objective, in the sense that we now have a single project manager for the scheme. He's been running around and he's drawn a program of the minister plus the MEC in KZN, the province, as well as Free State, to say how are they going to be addressing the issue of the farm dwellers, which has touched the media in terms of what is called the eviction. It's easy once you both as the two departments engage in this. We are also therefore assessing even our cast to ensure that the cast, the gap that Atishwat was talking about of between LRAD and cast is removed. In fact, we are now wanting for all intents and purposes that issue known as cast, that issue known as LRAD disappears, except that we are saying Farmer X wants the following support and will provide it. So there is a series of activities that are taking place so that we streamline it. We are also reducing the level at which this is applied. At the moment, it's at a province. We are now getting it down to the applied at a municipality or a district level, where we put all those resources to shorten the distance, but also adding the power where the decisions could be made there, rather than at the moment where CASP has got to be approved nationally. We want to cut that one out so that the approval is there. National would nearly come there to see whether there's been compliance in terms of what we would have set out, but you don't have national seeking and approving what would have been assessed and completed at that level. So there's a series of alignment issues that are coming in. Many of them are not yet complete, but they are already there. Chair, with your permission, if I could request that Mr. Mare come yet again on some of the issues that have been posed by yourself and the committee.
Thank you, Chair. The question from Mr. Abrams on Fatma. Sir, the answer is straightforward at the moment. No, we do not capitalize interest anymore. In the past, it's been within a specific framework, we did prove that interest can be capitalized. At the moment, we do not. The second one, Chairperson, as far as interest and capital being equal is concerned, in terms of the Induplum rule, accounting Induplum rule, the quality Induplum rule, Chairperson, we are not allowed to charge more interest than outstanding capital. That's why capital and interest are equal. Once they reach that stage, you stop adding interest on your outstanding debt as far as the person has not paid back. Chairperson, you've asked a number of questions on the HR and capacity in general. Chair, I've talked to that in the 58 million rand that we surrendered as unspent the previous financial year. The reason for that was vacancies on the road. And then as far as vacancies, Chairperson, I've mentioned in broad terms that on the 1st of April 2006, the vacancy status of this department was 800. As we sit here now, it's a little bit more than 400. The way we're working now, we're still working to a core establishment for the department. As I said initially, a vacancy that's not filled is not necessarily bad from the not filling point of view, but also maybe unnecessary post on the road. So we're working towards a core capacity status of this department. So then you've asked a question that I cannot answer off the top of my head. You've asked specifically the 1.024 million rand before the losses for the past year. Maybe, and I agree 100% with you, it's not supposed to happen, but keep in mind that the extent of this department is 110 outside office, 110 officers, excluding our camps at the border fencing, etc. And there are 3,000 people in a budget of 2 billion rand. A million rand loss in a financial year, but what I asked you, person, if you agree with that, that I respond in writing to exactly how the 1 million rand was made up and what happened in circumstances to boil that down to that. The visit chairperson already responded to the so-called political advice from Program 1. In terms of Treasury prescripts, Program 1 must accommodate Minister, Deputy Minister, DG's office, etc. In our case, the Deputy Minister is with the Department of Land Affairs. On our vote, it's the Minister and the DG on Program 1, where the management issues and the political leadership are coming from. Chairperson, as far as your questions on the monitoring and evaluation is concerned, it's not my portfolio, but I'll try to respond to that. It's the first time, like DJ said initially, Jay, it's the first time that the annual report is compiled from our quarterly review meetings, our so-called QRMs, where we meet every 3 months and we report on the preceding quarter, like that. And then those reports are binding and submitted, I think, to the portfolio committee nowadays. And then this document comes with that. So in the process of auditing this new process of ours, the Auditor General could not follow his spoor right to exactly the point of where that was. So it's more an administrative shortcoming or a shortcoming in our new process than anything else. And so as far as I know, the guys from Evaluation Monitoring are working to rectify that. Chairperson, thank you.
I'm talking on two questions. I think one question was asked earlier on livestock development strategy, and unfortunately, Chair, the member has left. However, I will actually just expand and say that within the department, what we have done with regard to the livestock development strategy is to concentrate on three aspects of it, which is the production, which touches more on genetic improvement, nutrition, and also the health. Currently, what is involved, I think, what Ms. Titi was mentioning earlier on with regard to bull production, we have been concentrating much more on improving the genetic material so that we have a better animal which can actually produce better wool. We would have to deal with other aspects of the strategy, which is nutrition and also the health, because it doesn't, you know, address our problem in dealing with one aspect and not dealing with others. And I think we must remember that production systems differ from one province to the other, and we rely mainly on the provinces. And I think nationally, currently, with regard to the strategy itself, we have started with the livestock, particularly cattle, on animal identification program in addition to the wool production, where it addresses issues around traceability of animals. Okay. Now, when we come to the issue on phytosanitary and zoosanitary measures, yes, we quite had a lot of lessons learned from those outbreaks. Partly, it's part and parcel of the competing demands in South Africa, and I think the DG mentioned it earlier on regarding the issues around import and export and the impact of that on production. And I want to quote one example. For instance, currently we are under pressure with the animal feed industry, in terms of them utilizing meat and bone meal for pet food and also using blood meal. And, you know, sometimes when you deal with the farmers, some of them, they look into short-term gains instead of the long-term implications. They're looking to the profits they can make in importing meat and bone meal from other countries and also utilizing blood meal, whereas they don't look into whether the repercussions that could have on the livestock industry, particularly when it comes to exports. So we've been talking with them on that aspect because they are looking into the issue of utilizing that and not looking into the fact that the issue it could result in our ban with regard to exports, particularly when it comes to the EU in terms of lead cow disease. So those are kind of issues we should balance. Some of the lessons which we learned, I think they would have to actually come to an extent where we talk to the farmers and have code of conduct with them. In that, you remember the foot and mouth disease in 2001-2003, it was due to the importation of feeding soil to pigs, and which addresses the issues around soil legislation, which we are discussing now with the, trying to draft with the environmental advisors to actually to prioritize that because it falls under their department. And those are kind of things which we should look into and have some code of conduct for the farmers, because when regulations and guidelines are there for them not to feed so as it is without sterilizing it and reducing the risk for transmission of diseases, it then becomes a problem with regard to transmission of diseases. The avian influenza story in Eastern Cape Province, also there were speculations. I think you know very well that it has been a lot of international debate with regard to the ability to trace back and understand the sources of infection. I mean, recently we had the debate with the foot and mouth disease outbreak in the UK where now they would say Pembroke Laboratory was a source and they would say no, the institution, the laboratory was not the one, is a mural factory which was actually made the transmission. There are also some speculations around global warming, which might lead to mutation of viruses and microbes, which could result to impact of diseases, and migration of some of the insects when it comes to entomology, insects which might transmit the disease. Yes, I would say, if you ask me whether we are ready, I think 6 out of 10, I would say that on the scale. We've learned a lot in the past years, but we shouldn't just look only into the veterinary aspect. And when you address the issues of biosecurity, I think it's quite important to realize that both animal health and plant health are quite important for the country. And the productive systems will never survive without actually showing those sanitary and sanitary measures. Thank you.
Let's get there. Yeah. Maybe I could just make one or two comments on questions which related to CAD. I think the one question, if I understood correctly, Mantuli, you asked whether we are achieving the objectives of CAD versus of CAD. If so, I think one thing I can say is that the review that we did came out, the review that we did on CAD, it was stated that from the stakeholders that were interviewed in that review that CASP had made a positive contribution. So I think one could say it had made a positive contribution. However, I think it's also important to note that CASP, the scheme CASP, the money that I'm explaining just now, that the national department gives to the provincial department, is only about 15% of the total amount that's going into support to beneficiaries or to farmers. If you take the provincial budgets, which relate to a fairly rough estimate now, but if you take part of the provincial budgets, which are actually going for support, and you compare that with the cash money that's coming from national departments, it's only about 15%. So there's a lot of money also in provinces that's going to the support element. And then I think another question about whether we shouldn't be aligning MAFITA as well. I think what the DG has explained, the process of life, the intent is, one of the intents is to ensure that decision making on a project is taken, the principle of subsidiarity, it should be taken as closely as possible as that project is happening. So, in fact, if you could do it in the district level or local government level, that would be the best place to do it. But that requires then the authority at that level where the decision is taking to say, here's the money that's coming from this particular funding vehicle. So whether it's MAFISA or Land Bank. So we are suggesting that there should be structures at, and I don't think we can go at this point in time yet, maybe right down to the actually local level, but certainly at the provincial and district level, to ensure that there's a mechanism there which includes all these, shall I say, one-stop services. Now, that's the intent of this program, is to actually make sure that as close as possible to the beneficiary, you provide these services jointly. You would have heard, some of the debates we've also had in the last year, discussions in the last year, is to ensure that partners are brought in. So this process that the DG is referring to would also include then the role of partners. And whilst we are, the current debate is very much governments related to a large extent, I believe that as soon as we have got a clear idea of how we believe it should be structured, the partners would be brought on board. I know that the department is already doing a lot of work engaging with particular large partners to ensure that the models that, for example, are being used in the fruit industry can be fed into this process. The models that are being used in the wool industry can be fed into this process. And then more specifically on who is designing the models, if we're talking about farm models, part of the process that the DG has referred to is there is a process where some agricultural economists are looking at that right now to ensure that there will be a number of models for the different sizes, different sort of commodity groups, and one will have to see how it turns out. But the intention is partners should be brought in to ensure that it's not government alone saying, well, this is the sort of model that should be supported. Thank you. Thank you. The problem, our lifetime is supposed to be as much as we've gone, way beyond it. Let me allow only Honorable Lobby that we have not asked a single question since we started, and take it from there.
This is my thing, I can't speak.
No, they know you can.
There are new people here. On page 810, we were told that the audit committee was not appointed for almost a year. Why was the committee not appointed and the failure to appoint it? How has this impacted on the work that is supposed to be done by that committee? Chair, secondly, this question of is data text. What criteria are used to determine who qualifies to get this data text? And what is contained in this data text? Because I would have understood that almost every homestead in my village would qualify for a kind of data text because they have gardens that are lying fallow that cannot be cultivated because they don't have the need. If there are data text available, what should they do in order to get them? And lastly, just a comment. If our committee still needs to have some hours of engagement with the department on the question of MAFISA, so that there's a common understanding. What does that mean for the people who are supposed to be the intended beneficiaries in terms of them accessing this support from the state that serves a lot? And I think the department needs to do something more also to ensure that there's a greater visibility and business. The department should be busy in the village to ensure that there is a program that are meant for the poor, to reach these people. We don't see a lot of visibility of the... You see all of these reports, things that are contained here, that the department is supposed to be doing, but it's very little of activity on the ground. And there's a lot of district municipalities. They've got their own program to assist people. And then there are the department in the provinces. And then you just never know where to. You see in some village an activity taking place. Then you want to find out, so no, this is the district municipality. And when you go to the district municipality, no, they don't have the money, go to agriculture, and it creates a lot of confusion. So I think there's a need for all these activities and programs to be aligned, especially by those structures of the state that operate in the same area of operation.
Can we quickly respond to these questions and wrap up?
The impact. One, there has been no full and a comprehensive report to do them. Because up to now, what has been at issue was to ensure that there is the provision of this service. It's almost like what we had said to the committee regarding CASP, to say for some time in the lifetime of CASP, we have been so concerned about the provinces not spending even more than 30% that we just had to focus on that. With what Mr. Swart had said, now provinces are going up to the spending of something like 100%. We now can go into that. So we had, in a similar manner, then indicated to the committee that would then investigate on the quality of the spend and its impact. It would be the same issue in this particular case. What we now have, Chair and Honorable Member, will be merely anecdotal, where people are saying they are happy about this, but that's anecdotal, so we'd rather have a more comprehensive report on actually the impact of even the starter pack. The way it is structured in Gosholomisa is that at the moment, particularly the starter pack was linked directly to the system that comes from the social development, the
department, what it would do is that it would take the beneficiaries or the more vulnerable groups for 3 months, which is purely an income support. But under the social development, it's called an emergency fund to take a household for 3 months. Within these 3 months, the arrangement between ourselves and social development was that you will sort of try to sift through the households and say, which are those that are receiving this assistance that have any of the members, if not all, within the household that can be engaged into productive activities. Productive activities where then agriculture could come on board. And that's where we have picked up the 66,000 that is mentioned here. But we've got another system of our own where we've done a vulnerability assessment. Now I think it's completed across the country, where we can produce mappings of vulnerable households. And these now can be independent of the social development department, be targeted along the lines that Nkosi Lumisa has indicated. I cannot at the moment, because I don't have my own people that could talk directly into how and where are we then. But the criteria already is that we've already done an assessment of the vulnerable households, their spread and where they are and what are their weaknesses in terms of their vulnerability. That study we do have and we've published it. It's now the, as I say, engaging exactly to ensure then that the starter pack addresses the specific issues, including the content. It used to differ the content. The one that I could speak more to check is the one that would be saying it would not make sense to give somebody a wheelbarrow, a seed, and not irrigation material, and not other material. So in other words, when we say a package, it's because we are saying it has to go as a comprehensive. But this is not part of the report, that we are finding that the package is actually split. That would make it very, very ineffective in terms of its original intent, in as far as that is concerned. I hope I have addressed all the issues by the one of the audit committee. I take the comment by Mafisa as a wake-up call, in the sense that the department chair has really got to engage much more stronger with the community, well beyond where we've had this pilot. Where we did, Minister Idiza launched it and there was a campaign, but in many respects you can't say it's enough in terms of continuing, particularly when we are unfolding it. At least we could talk to, amongst others, in terms of what we are planning. But the comment is well taken. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, response on a question from Mr. Olamisa on the Internal Audit Committee. It is true, Chair, what happened, it is not my portfolio, but what had happened in practice, Chair, is that the contacts for the previous members, and in terms of the Public Finance Management Act, you need two outside members and one inside member. The outside members are appointed in terms of a contract for a period of a year or 2 years, and expired, and then the guys from the Internal Auditor's Office advertised for members for this committee. If I'm talking just off the top of my head, the first round was unsuccessful, the second round I got one that the minister approved and appointed, and the third round of that was the second person was appointed. So this is correct, Chair, and then the committee informally was appointed by March, and between March and the end of the Auditor General's report, that will be July, the committee used that time to work through the internal audit inspections, as well as our reports, etc. Nothing as far as the task or the jobs from the department side was not done. It was still done. And the new committee just pick up on the slack up to date at the end of July. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Let me conclude this meeting. Honorable C, we left time as we move on. DG, I think we'll get back to you with regard to the date, on those issues that need to talk to. If it's possible, can we get the report by the Harvard group of economists? Wouldn't mind to have a look at it. Now, there was this question which was raised around Sawit. I think for me, it raises a question about all the trusts that are there. What are the accountability mechanisms? They don't come here. And through NMC and so on, they submit reports to the minister. Now the question would be what then happens in terms of that sort of communication line, and what is the best way of ensuring that there is some kind of accountability. Well, as you say, they are not public entities. Well, are they private? Maybe not. Perhaps they are semi-public. Maybe they are semi-private, I don't know. But I think this question about their accountability, we need to crack it and see whether even the NAMC itself, is it the right mechanism? What is its core mandate and how does this matter of the trust arise in the context of their core mandate? What is the best mechanism for them, for us to have this trust accounting? So members, lunch is in the old assembly dining restaurant, whatever. Otherwise, good report. Member for this again tomorrow, what's the thing? Committee room 390, this will be looking at the report on the foreign land scholarship report. So, the 9 o'clock time is watching. So, we've got more time to talk to our colleagues.